Welcome to Dawson Speak, a podcast about Dawson's Creek. I'm Tracy.
And this is Charles.
And time for season 3 recap. Woohoo!
Another season in the books.
Another season in the books, and we haven't gotten canceled yet. Congratulations to us. I am still a bit asthmatic, so I apologize for any coughing that may occur or any shortness of breath. But I'm fine. I'm alive. We made it.
We did it. Did you think we were going to do it? This was a dramatic season.
This was a very dramatic season, and it also felt like two completely different seasons we watched, which we have talked about. I think we talked about this in the last episode. We've mentioned it a lot during the season, and we've commented on some comments and stuff we've gotten on our website, DawsonSpeak.com, where we've interacted with y'all who have kind of noted that too, that all the Eve stuff feels like a different season.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
For this episode, I went through all the episodes again, and I was like, I forgot all of these things for good reason.
Yeah, it's insane. Before we get into it, thank you to everyone who continues to rate and review us on iTunes/Apple Podcasts. If you have not yet done that, please do. It does help us out. And it's nice hearing from y'all, particularly if you have constructive feedback. So thank you for that. As always, you can check out our website, DawsonSpeak.com, which all of the links to where you might subscribe to us, if you listen on Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, however you listen, all the links are there, including a page on how to contact us, which any way you want to contact us, email, Twitter, Facebook, our website, we do read all the comments and try to interact as much as possible. It's all on there. It's all on the website.
Even our bonus content is over there.
Even our bonus content, like Charles's fan fiction, which honestly, I forgot that we did that this season until I was looking back through my notes and I was like, oh yeah, Witch Island was this season.
We did a book club too.
We did a book club. That? Yeah. Hey, speaking of book club, this is a good segue. Before we get into our season 3 recap and all of that good stuff, there's a couple things we want to talk about. So we got this email from one of our listeners, Sarah, a couple of weeks ago, I want to say, or maybe about a month ago. This is from Sarah B. I'm using last initials here because we've actually got a few Sarahs who have commented or emailed us. So this is from Sarah B. She emailed us a link to these summer diaries. Now, this is something that, Charles, you and I talked about. I want to say it was around the time of the Creek Week stuff, because it was mentioned in their Entertainment Weekly cover story that there was this website that the WB or Sony had created back in the day during the show when it aired, and it was called Dawson's Desktop, right? And we've gotten some emails from people. I think it was Angie who forwarded us that newsletter that you could sign up for on the Dawson's Desktop site. So this was basically an official site that was created by, like I said, the WB, people who worked on the show. And a lot of it was, you know, these TV shows back in the day when they had websites, you could download desktop wallpapers. You can, I think some of them had official kind of fan forms that weren't like Television Without Pity or anything like that. And they also had, quote unquote, extra content. There's actually a really good Adweek article that I'm going to link on our website in our show notes for this episode. That's all about kind of how Dawson's Creek was what they call the connected content pioneer. So this is before the days of Twitter and Instagram and social media stuff, again, that we've talked about before. Like, what would that conversation have been like had there been social media? Well, Dawson's Creek did have Dawson's Desktop, and it was essentially a website that was from the characters' perspectives, if you will. And
yeah, they were in-universe.
Yeah, and one of the things that they created for the summer in between season periods of time, because, you know, they didn't have, there was no way to keep up engagement or content over the summer. One of the ways that Dawson's Creek did it was that they had this thing called Summer Diaries. Dawson's Desktop is a website. It still exists, but there's no content on it.
A bunch of it is broken too, right?
Yeah, there's just no content on it. But they had this thing called Summer Diaries, and every summer it would be, I think I read on some fan forums where they were like, I think writer's assistants or people who did work on the show wrote these diaries, quote unquote diaries, or content for the in-between seasons. And they weren't always canon because they hadn't written the next season yet. So it was stuff that was being written. It kind of referred to stuff that the writers were planning on doing. So some of the stuff that I will say, Charles, that you and I have read in these summer diaries aren't exactly going to come back in season 4.
Okay.
But someone on Tumblr posted all of the summer diaries for in between season 3 or 4. We're going to put that link on our website as well. But it's summer diaries for Pacey and Joey specifically and their whole boat trip. And included in these diaries, it's like letters that they wrote home, emails they wrote home.
Their feelings about each other. Their
feelings about each other, yes. It's kind of cute. And it also answers, I think, a few questions that we're going to have going into season 4.
It's a ton of content.
It is a lot of content. It's what, 14 weeks documented, right?
Yeah, from the both of them.
Yeah, so the link we're going to post on our website, there are 3 pages of content on Tumblr. So you've it's posted in backward order, though. So you have to go to page 3 and then read backwards, essentially, because week 1 starts at the end of this thing. Yeah. So go ahead and do that. It's actually kind of interesting.
Like, it was a lot of fun.
It's basically fan fiction. It's like official fan fiction.
Yeah. I'm holding this at a higher tier of canon than, like, the books.
Oh, yeah. The published books. Yeah. This does feel more real. And I will say that because, you know, they talk about how, or Pacey and Joey write about how they read to one another on the boat. That is something that comes up again in
the future.
In the future, yes. That's something that pops up. This is something we're gonna talk about. We talk about characters that are going away. Buzz is not in the show anymore, by the way.
Oh.
That's not the character that I was teasing you about last week, though, which we're gonna get to. But Buzz is gone. So it almost tries to explain Buzz no longer being in the show through the emails.
That makes it really sad.
Yeah, well, too many characters at this point. Oh, they bring in some Young American stuff in here. Will Krudzki is mentioned in here, and Will Krudzki's dad is mentioned. So that's kind of interesting. And then there's also some fun little Easter eggs, if you will, about Wilmington, where they were like, man, we passed through Wrightsville Beach in North Carolina. It looks so much like Capeside.
Yeah. It reminds me of Capeside, except it's warmer and there are more mosquitoes.
Yeah, so that was really funny.
I really appreciated that they had breakfast there, and Joey really enjoyed the biscuits. Like, we really enjoyed the biscuits.
We did really enjoy those biscuits. So, yeah, that's fun. You guys should go check it out. It's a good read if you have some time to kill. Speaking of things sent to us on the interwebs, we've got some emails and comments and social media-ing to go through. Charles? Beep,
boop. Yeah.
All right. Some of these emails are long, so I am going to summarize. I apologize to you all in advance. Oh, first thing is directly about our season finale episode. So comments on the website from Rachel and from Sarah M., who have been commenting back and forth. It looks like y'all have been having conversations, so that's cool. It's about this Jafar timeline of Dawson, if you will. And actually, this is a really interesting theory from Rachel. So she said, my theory about the timeline between Dawson being rewarded with his cheering up squad and Joey running to go meet up with Pacey is the same day, but that there must have been a scrapped scene where Joey shows up at Doug's house to talk to Pacey after a quick change, but Doug informs her that Pacey decided to leave a day early. So her theory here is that Pacey's at the wedding and he says, I'm shipping out tomorrow.
Yes.
And her theory is that, like, Pacey basically moved his trip up a day early.
Yeah.
Because he's like, I just want to get out of here. He doesn't want to sit around as his two best friends, you know, try to rekindle their romance or whatever. And
might as well leave now.
Yeah. So Joey runs off the dock. Dawson cries. And then Joey runs over to Doug's apartment. Well, she changes out of her dress. Because we see Joey running past Mitch and Gail's car as they're exiting, right? So she's running.
Yes.
So Rachel's theory is that Joey did go to Doug's apartment, and the Doug was like, actually, Pacey's already gone. Like, he's already at the dock. And then she runs down to the dock, which is why she's running in that scene. Because if it had been the next day, like,
Why would she be late?
She was frantically running. She had no idea what time he was actually shipping out. Like, she would have just shown up first thing in the morning. Also, yeah. Because right after you see her running out of the house, or running out of the Leary kind of backyard, front yard, whatever, Dawson goes up to his room, and then everyone is there, and they're like, let's hang out, and we'll make you feel better, right? So that would make sense, because that was our question. That's kind of our question, too.
Yeah.
About the timeline of things.
This makes so much sense.
Yeah.
Also, looping in something we talked about earlier, Don't they say that he decided to leave a day early in Summer Diaries?
I think so. Wait, did they?
Yeah. Yeah, because that's why he forgot the money for his trip. This is all, like, not canon. But they say in Summer Diaries he decides to leave a day early. And also that Joey doesn't ask permission to go with him.
I literally just read the Summer Diaries and I completely forgot. Oh, yeah. So the Summer Diaries also points out that Joey didn't actually tell Bessie that she was going on this trip. She emailed her at, like, this port that they were at and were like, FYI, yeah, I'm on this boat. And Bessie was mad.
This has given us so much more material to work with.
Interesting. But
this one day, like, this same day theory makes a lot of sense. Like, all the pieces fit, and it eliminates a plot hole that we had.
Yeah, because, like, otherwise, Joey would have packed and been prepared, whereas
yeah,
she gets on the boat, and she's like, I'm actually kind of worried about, like, the next change of clothes.
Yeah.
All right. This is canon.
Wow.
We now officially accept this as canon.
We declare it. We're canon court.
Yes.
For Dawson's Creek.
Yes, canon court approves.
Yeah, wow.
And these Summer Diaries really help fill in the blanks because the Summer Diaries also point out that, yeah, Pacey forgot his money. Joey only has her ATM card.
Okay, does this come up again at the beginning of the next season?
No, I mean, the whole money thing, they do bring it up, like, when they come back to, I think they mentioned, you know what, I'm not going to say anything about season four. Like, you'll find out within the first episode. Okay, another thing I wanted to bring up from comments on the website. Looking back at season three, Sarah had pointed out that a lot of what she remembered of the show were these Pacey and Joey moments, and most of them were from season three. She said there are moments, not lines or scenes, which I think speaks to the writers and how they wrote the show, which is something we've talked about before. And I think is going to be very evident when we talk about our top five moments of the season, which is something we do every study hall, because it was really hard to pick. Right?
I love all of my moments, but I don't love them as a unit. I feel kind of bad.
It's so difficult. There were a lot of really strong moments, but it's also like, I tried really hard in my top five moments to not only pick Pacey Joey moments, which was hard because there are some top true love ship moments. Speaking of production and sort of television tropes, if you will, we got this email like a month ago from another one of our listeners, Josh, who wanted to give a shout out to Hal Douglas, who is the voice who recorded all those promos for the WB back in the day, which is pretty cool. He calls him like the unsung hero of the creek because really, like, those promos, even as silly as they are sometimes, those do draw you in.
Yeah, they make you want to watch the episode.
Yeah, and Josh says that he's currently teaching television production at a high school in Indiana, and one of our semester finals is to cut together a trailer for a TV show or movie, and I use Dawson's Creek examples all the time to emphasize just how a few words and a few scenes can get you hyped without even being completely invested in the show. So I love that. It's cool.
I'm glad to know who the voice was.
Hal Douglas.
Dawson's Creek, The Longest Day. Next week on the WB Wednesday night.
Okay, so we've gotten a few tweets about this and emails from people who watched the show back in the day. And a lot of people say when it came to Dawson crying, I think a few people were like, you know, by the time it happened, I was just wanted to get to the next Pacey Joey scene. So I wasn't really paying attention.
Yeah.
Some people were like, oh, that was weird. But they didn't really think much about it because they just wanted to move on to the next thing. We also got a tweet responding, which I did retweet, about James Vanderbeek recreating that Dawson crying meme. Because Charles, you had said in the last episode, you're like, I don't think even James Vanderbeek can recreate that face. And he has.
It, if you look at it, the first face, more iconic than the second face.
Okay, so this is an email from Christine, who was one of the people who said that she remembered thinking that the Dawson crying face was weird, but she just kind of overlooked it. She also mentioned that Paul Steepen, who was executive producer of the show at the time, that he was, back in the day, like a big Dawson Joey shipper.
Interesting.
And she said he would advocate for the romance in interviews throughout season three. I don't have any specific examples because this was me reading things on the internet 20 years ago, but I remember in our Pacey Joey corner of the world where I spent my internet time, we all had a raging hatred of him, which is weird now when he says positive things about Pacey Joey after the series ended, but it could be a case of jumping on the bandwagon or the things he used to say about Dawson Joey blocked out anything nice he may have said about Pacey Joey at the time.
That's so interesting.
She said that she and her friends also found Dawson to be creepy and abusive for a lot of season three, though weirdly enough, she said, most of my older internet friends were into Dawson Joey far more than Pacey Joey. I think it's a reflection on how romantic relationships have changed and acceptable behavior in them is different than it used to be, which I think is actually a really interesting point. Like,
yeah, that's a great observation.
Yeah, like we as a society are openly discussing problematic relationship traits now that more so than I think we did back in the day, perhaps.
Yeah, and even by like modern standard or by modern standards, even like some of the more extreme things that Pacey does feels a little bit not much nowadays, right?
Yeah. Christine also said that regarding the finale, she said, I'm really sad they didn't include any Andy and Joey closure since the show was so inconsistent about their friendship, which I think is actually a really good point. We talk a lot about the evolution of Joey and Jen.
Yeah.
But Joey and Andy is actually a really interesting relationship because remember in the beginning of the season, they were shown to be pretty good friends.
Mm-hmm. Like Joey went to pick Andy up from the mental hospital.
Yeah. And also like with all of the Rob Logan stuff, she called Joey.
Mm-hmm.
And then Christine says the show very much went to isolate Joey and make it seem like she had no other friends than Dawson in her life. Which is also interesting. The Summer Diaries is actually a really interesting extension of season three and kind of this portrayal of Joey not having friends. Because she emails Jen quite a bit. There's like some correspondence between her and Jen in the Summer Diaries.
Yeah, well, she feels like she can't email Andy or Jack right now, right?
Well, she's afraid to email Jack. Or she's afraid to write to Jack or email Jack because she doesn't want Andy to find out.
Yeah, and she doesn't want Andy to find out because she, well, because, you know,
she still it's a sensitive bad, subject.
Yeah. So she is in like a pickle.
She is. And then the last part of Christine's email, which made me laugh, is she said Graham showed up for Pacey's play and for his goodbye party, and as well as agreed to do the Potter B&B fake guest thing. And I feel like the show really robbed us of a storyline where Pacey and Graham have become BFFs.
Okay, that would be a great storyline.
I'd love that.
That'd be so good. And Graham's would pull it off so great. Everyone would be happy. She'd be so proud of Pacey. She is already proud of Pacey.
I love it. Yeah. Graham's is everyone's, like, guardian angel.
Yeah. She's the best. I love her.
All right. I don't want to be like, we get so many emails, I can't read them all. We appreciate we do read everything. We do appreciate it. I am making my way through responding to you all. But thank you for sending us your thoughts and keep doing that.
My day gets brighter every time I get a Dawson's Creek tweet.
Yeah, every time we get new Facebook messages or emails, they make us smile. So we appreciate it. We hope that you guys are having as much fun listening to this. Or maybe you're really frustrated and screaming at us while you're like driving to work every Monday morning. But either way, we appreciate it.
Passenger advisory is typical officer protocol.
So let's get on to the study hall at hand. It is time to talk about season 3. All 23 episodes.
We're at full length seasons now.
Let's talk first about some of the new characters we met.
Okay.
So, we met Eve. We met Henry. We met...
the Greens.
Right, we met Principal Green and Nikki Green. We met AJ. We met Ethan. We met Matt Caulfield. We met Aunt Gwen. We met and then promptly forgot about Belinda McGovern.
Oh, yeah. Poor Belinda McGovern.
Who else did we meet?
We met Rob Logan.
All right, we met Rob Logan.
Is that it?
Oh, we met Buzz.
Oh, yeah, we met Buzz.
We re-met Bodhi.
He came back.
We met Mr. Fricky, Fred Fricky.
Oh, yeah.
We met...
Mrs. Freckling.
Oh, right. Mrs. Freckling, the homecoming queen leader.
Yeah.
We met all those theater kids that Pacey did that play with.
We met a lot of people this season.
We really did. So who was your favorite new character that we met?
My favorite new character we met and that I miss already was Principal Green.
Aww.
It breaks my heart how he went out, but he was such, like, he believed in everybody, right? Like, he believed in Dawson's ability as a filmmaker. He asked him to cut together, like, a video of the Minutemen. He believed in Andy's ethics, even though maybe he shouldn't have. He believed in Pacey's ability to, like, have a good impact on people. He believed in Joey's art. He's the kind of educator you want in your life.
I really wonder why the show wrote him off. I'm so curious. Like, maybe it was a contract thing. He had only signed on for like a limited number of episodes, but I feel like it's such a shame because he added such a good stability to Cape Side High, and the show was really trying to pull focus back on them being in high school.
Yeah, like the part, all the high school stuff that he was there for, great high school stuff.
Yeah, so I'm kind of bummed. I'm bummed about that too. Yeah,
but he's such a great character.
He really is. My favorite new character, related to Principal Green, is Nikki Green. I think it is such a shame that they essentially, like, I don't want to say got him, but they got rid of her character so quickly. And I don't understand why. She had
so much more space.
She really did. I mean, they brought her in with a really strong angle, a really strong character. I mean, she was someone who could be Dawson's, like, who could really challenge Dawson when it came to film and his ability to tell stories. And Dawson's not had someone like that before.
Yeah.
Who not only was a filmmaker themselves, but someone who also understood film.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like Nikki really opened Dawson up. Spoiler alert, this is one of my top moments. Nikki also, you know, I think had the ability to help Dawson through his identity crisis, even if it was also partly inspired by her.
I feel like if Nikki had stuck around, Dawson would not have had his Jafar turn.
Yes, I think so too. I think actually this is another part of another email that we got from who sent this email? From Judy. Sorry, I forgot to read this part of this email from Judy. She had brought up my Dawson's Creek Gilmore Girls comparison that I made in the last episode, and she said, you know, about Gilmore Girls, when they brought in the character of Jess to create this love triangle, the boyfriend, Dean, at the time, they kind of changed his character between seasons 1, 2, and 3. Like, they made him a little more aggressive, a little more mean, if you will, just so that people would find it more believable and kind of root a little bit harder for the Jess character. And she said she feels like that's what they did with Pacey, Joey, and Dawson, and why they felt like they needed to change Dawson's character a little bit, because the writers were rooting more for, I don't know, like, whatever reason was going on behind the scenes, but they had to basically take him to the extreme. And I wonder if you had a character like Nikki there who not only could help Dawson through his, like, anger, but was also outside of their clique. Like, she wasn't as into this group as all of them were, this incestuous little group. Yeah, I think Dawson would have been a better person if Nikki stuck around.
I agree.
Oh, more new characters we met. Obviously, Will Krutzke.
Oh, yeah, Krutzke.
Jen's mom.
Oh.
I'm just trying to, I mean, these new characters are also just coming to my mind as we're talking about this. But let's move on to our least favorite new character, and we've got so many to choose from.
Quite a few to pick from.
Who is your least favorite new character we've met?
I was debating between Matt Caulfield and Rob Logan. I feel like that's not a surprise.
Okay.
I still haven't quite come to a decision, but at this point, I'm going to say Matt Caulfield. One, because he never suffers any consequences, really, right? Everything's fine for him. Two, he's basically what's wrong with America. And three, he, like, never admits that he does anything wrong.
Yeah, he's just the spoiled rich kid.
Yeah, whereas Rob Logan, he's also a spoiled rich kid, but at least he feels fear at some point.
Yeah, they're both pretty awful.
I hate Matt Caulfield.
Yeah, and he is the reason that the Greens left.
I know. This show would have been so much better if Caulfield was not in.
This is true.
This season.
This is true. I was half expecting you to say AJ.
Okay, like, I dislike AJ, but I don't hate AJ. He's not evil. And I'm happy with his ending with, what's her name, Madison?
I don't remember her name.
Well, we also met her this season. I was happy with his ending with his childhood friend.
Yeah, yeah. Least favorite new character for me was really hard. I was so tempted to say Eve, but the reason why I'm not saying Eve, and I really hated Eve, was that I think that the writers also had zero interest in Eve.
Yeah.
Like, they started it and then were like, oh no.
This was a bad idea.
Which is why, like, well, should I tell you this?
What?
Eve comes up again.
What?
But I'm not going to tell you in what context, how, when, or why.
Are you kidding me? She comes up again?
I didn't say that she shows up again, but she comes up again, is all I'm going to say.
I'm nervous.
Well, you'll find out. I think my least favorite character, though.
Mm-hmm.
Ah.
Come on.
Is it Gwen? No. No, it's Henry. It's Henry.
Oh, wow.
Because I feel like Henry also suffers no consequences because Jen just immediately forgives him. And I think Henry is worse for Jen than, like, oh, I don't want to say she's worse than Jen for, like, than Billy was, you know? But, like, I don't think he was good for Jen at all.
Okay. Okay.
That's my argument here. I just do not care for Henry. I think he's... I don't know why the writers kept trying to push him as, like, the heartthrob of the show.
Because he looks like, what's his face?
Leonardo DiCaprio, which is something else that Judy brought up in her email. Like, I get it. I get that that's what they were trying to go for. But, I mean, oh, I'm a football player who also eats veggie burgers and plays guitar. Like,
he teaches Jen how to love, Tracy. That's not important. Does he, though?
But that's not love. That's not love.
It's not.
I just think it's bad. It's toxic. It's just, I just don't like him. And he's a bad football player. The end.
Okay.
He's my least favorite character because I feel like it robbed us of other good Jen storylines we could have had.
That is true. I was planning on mentioning this a little later in the episode, but Jen does kind of feel like she petered out at some point, right?
Yeah, like she barely got any screen time with the other characters besides, I feel like she got more scenes with Jack at the beginning and then, you know, a couple with Joey near the end, but it's like she really didn't have a lot of interaction with the group.
Yeah, and they kind of like hand wave it off as like, oh, she's off having her relationship with Henry, but that's no fun.
Yeah, and then we don't see any of that. Again, like you have mentioned before, we only see the, like, turmoil. And I'm just not into it.
Every time they're on screen, someone's at the hospital or dying or something.
Michelle Williams deserves better. She could have had a lot more meatier storylines. I don't know.
She could have won an Emmy.
Like I just feel like the storylines that Jen got and that Michelle Williams really excels at, you know, it's confronting her mother. It's...
yeah.
You know, her one-on-ones with Grams. It's the fun comedic stuff that she gets with, like, the banter she gets with Jack and with Pacey at some extent. Like, it was just wasted on this Henry romance all season, and I blame Henry, and I hate him.
Okay. That's a very understandable criticism.
Yes. Okay. Speaking of favorites, what's your favorite episode of the season?
My favorite episode of the season is episode 18, Neverland.
Really?
Are you surprised?
I'm actually really surprised. What was your rating for that one? Do you remember?
Originally, I had rated it a 9. And then a few episodes later, I bumped the rating up to a 9.5.
Okay.
Which, like, by the numbers, it's not my highest rated episode of the season. But it's my favorite. I like it the most. And, like, there was a lot about that episode to like, right? It opened amazing because it opened right after the Pacey Joey kiss. So like you cut right into the kiss and then you cut into like Joey straight up assaulting Pacey and being super angry about it, which like you got a sense of her feelings. And then I really liked how the episode split into like a guy side of the episode and a girl side of the episode. And I mentioned this during our podcast episode, but I really like when TV shows normally have like a mixed cast and then they split off to do that because you find out more about the characters, right? And then I mean the real reason I love this episode so much is because like what is basically the C storyline with Ethan, Jack, and Mr. McPhee is just so good.
I forgot that was the episode with your favorite storyline.
Probably my second favorite storyline of this entire season is Jack and his dad. And this is where, like, a lot of that happens.
So, I cannot remember who said this to me. It might have been... I cannot remember who tweeted this. But someone said I should give you a warning.
Oh, no.
Going into season 4.
Oh, no. Tracy, I don't want a warning.
So, the actor who plays Mr. McPhee died in October of 2000 of that year. They had filmed a few episodes of season 4 already. But so they still aired those, but he gets written off the show because that actor passed away.
Oh.
So someone on Twitter was like, you should maybe mention that one to Charles because the other ones I'm not going to tell you. The community has voted. I'm not going to tell you who else was leaving the show.
Oh.
But that actor, essentially that character goes away because that actor died. And someone was like, I think you should warn Charles because he loves that relationship and that storyline so much. So just want to, I don't want you to be surprised. Yeah. Are you upset? I'm sorry.
I'm so sad.
I'm sorry.
You can't just surprise me with that. Oh my gosh.
But wouldn't it have been even worse as we were watching it and then it just like that just abruptly like disappears?
Yeah.
He passed away abruptly too. So it wasn't like okay. They could plan for it. So just an FYI. There's going to be no closure on that end.
I guess that's what life is like sometimes.
It really is. It's a metaphor.
But yeah, that's why I like Neverland so much.
All right. No, that's a good episode to like.
What's your favorite episode?
My favorite episode is the one that we both gave a 10 out of 10 to. It is 312, Weekend in the Country.
Yay.
So I really like that episode. We both really like that episode for all the reasons we've talked about already. But I think that it was such a good turning point. Because up until that point, the show had been dragging. Like when we talk about, we're going to talk about our average season ratings. But like, I think mine would have been higher if I had not hated the beginning of season 3 so much. But
oh, yeah.
I just think that this was a good turning point. It was an obvious turning point for the show. It brought everyone into one space. It was like a very much like a bottle episode. Mm-hmm. And I do love a good bottle episode. I also really appreciated the more lighthearted, fun moments. You know, them all making breakfast and dancing in the kitchen in the morning. Bodhi coming back.
That was great.
I think it's just a very sweet episode that wasn't a filler.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes bottle episodes could feel like fillers in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like this was just it was a nice, sweet episode that the show needed to kind of reset a little bit. After all of the Eve stuff, after all of the weird attempts to hook Pacey and Jen up, and, you know, just kind of being confused about the general direction of it. You got all the characters in one place, the characters that we love, especially.
Yeah.
And just really nice, lovely moments. And I think that It's a good medium in between the like, oh, this episode is dragging, and the like, oh, my emotions are everywhere kind of episodes, right? Like, I think that Weekend in the Country was like a nice middle ground for it, and that's why it's my favorite episode of the season.
Oh, that's really good points.
Yeah. Your least favorite episode of the season?
Episode 5, Indian
Me
Summer.
Me too!
Let's talk about how bad this episode was. This episode ruined film noir for me.
It was so heavy-handed.
Oh my
and boring.
God.
It was just a boring episode.
Everyone was so sweaty. Horizon lines were all over. And now that we've been to Wilmington when it's hot, I understand the sweatiness some more. I feel like that's not why they did it. I can appreciate that. But, like, I don't care about Eve at all.
Yeah.
Rob is gross. Andy's evil. There's nothing redeeming about this episode.
No, and this has also had those shots that you hated where the camera would pan to a light and then like fade into another scene off of a light or whatever. Yeah, you'd complain about it for like a long time. I think I might have cut a lot of it out of the episode. But yeah, this was not a fun episode for us at all.
I noted preparing for this episode that one of the reasons I disliked Indian Summer is because like the Eve Jen half sister thing basically goes nowhere.
Yep.
But apparently Eve comes up again, so I don't know for sure.
It barely does. It's a bad episode.
Yeah.
I think this is also my lowest rated episode of the season. I think I gave this one a 5.
It definitely was mine. I gave it a 6.5.
Yeah. We were not into it. I'm glad we're on the same page with that.
Yay.
Ooh. All right, let's talk about moments.
Okay.
Usually for this part, we only do our top moments instead of also adding bottom moments because we don't want to focus on the bad stuff. So let's talk about our top 5 moments. We'll start at number 5 and then work our way up.
So my 5th favorite moment of the season is all the way in episode 2, Homecoming. And it's the first football practice that you see because, like, not only does it center you back in high school, but Jen's a cheerleader and the cheerleader's cheer is really, like, sardonic and sarcastic, which is hilarious to me. And that's when Jack discovers he's really good at football.
1, 2, 3, 4. We don't care if we don't score. 5, 6, 7, 8. A few points would be really great. That's all right. That's okay. You're going to work for us someday.
What do you think?
Jen, this is for a pep rally. I mean, don't you think they should be slightly more...
peppy?
No, optimistic.
No, Jack, I've tried. Believe me, I've tried. Think I want to be held responsible for killing off the last vestiges of Capeside school spirit? But ever since they elected a new leader of their little junta, all they want to do are these nasty, sardonic, self-aware cheers. Worse, they've even started to dress like me. It's like they're genetically predisposed to having absolutely no identity.
Yeah, well, that's the blonde gene.
Not funny.
Oh, all the football stuff. Do you remember that? They had that for, what, like 3 episodes?
I know. Remember he was on national TV because he was so good at football?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he got contacted by Ben Strait that way. Yeah.
And then they never mention it again.
Again, that goes back to us always sort of forgetting that Jack and Henry were friends.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And what I love about that scene, too, is that Jack and Jen were also really, really good scenes.
Yeah.
Good scenes. They were also really, really good friends in that scene,
mm-hmm.
which you kind of lose out on as the season goes because of Henry, even though you get, like, bits and pieces of it, especially towards the end of the season. Like,
yeah.
You don't get a lot of Jack-Jen later on.
Well, they'll bring it back.
I'm glad.
That's a good number five moment. My number five moment.
Uh-huh.
It's a Pacey Joey moment.
Mm-hmm.
I think it might be my only explicit Pacey Joey moment on my top five, and I'll explain why when we talk about other moments.
Okay.
It is from 322 Anti-Prom. It is the I Remember Everything.
You were wearing that blue sweater, the snowflakes that you have. You were walking down the hallways at school. I was annoying you as per usual. I said, look, Pacey, I just found my mother's bracelet this morning, so why don't you cut me some slack?
Remember that?
I remember everything.
It is not only one of my top five season three moments, but one of my top Pacey Joey ship moments. It's romantic, obviously, but it's Pacey when he's not doing a grand Pacey gesture. And I think we get a lot of grand Pacey gestures, which again, like, those are classic Pacey, and we love a good grand gesture. But this was so, like, subtle, and this was Pacey not trying to cause shit, you know, at Dawson's family's restaurant. He was keeping his distance the way that Joey asked. Joey went over and asked him to dance, and, you know, he couldn't hide his feelings. He was very hard on his sleeve, expressing them, but not in a very over-the-top way, which I think is also interesting because it's so opposite to what Dawson is thinking of Pacey at that point, where he's like, you know, this is the guy who beat up a bully and bought you a wall, but it's like the Pacey that Joey has fallen for is this Pacey, the side of Pacey that so few people actually get to see. And I just think it's just classic Pacey.
That is very sweet.
Yeah.
And it's a good moment. It's not on my top five.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So what's number four?
My number four is also a Joey Pacey moment, but it's a sad Joey Pacey moment. It's the end of episode 20, The Longest Day, where they break up and they make all those boat metaphors about how there's stormy seas ahead.
Oh, she looks beautiful in the water.
This morning was really just a formality. Still don't know if she's seaworthy.
She looks pretty solid.
I don't know. I think I see some stormy weather ahead.
I love that scene because the writing is a little bit ridiculous. And two, it like supports the good ship Poey's the first actual ship theory. But also, like, that Joshua Jackson and Katie Holmes both do amazing in that scene. And you can, like, just the hurt that they both feel just, like, comes out at the screen at you. Like, every line is strained. Everything is, like, difficult for them to say. Everything's so sad. And you know how much I love feeling sad.
Charles really does enjoy feeling sad. Sad boy aesthetic is Charles. No, that is good. Their acting is A+. It's interesting you chose, like, the breakup as one of your top moments.
I know. It's maybe not healthy, but...
But it's funny that you mentioned also boat metaphors because the Summer Diaries, literally week one starts out with a boat metaphor, and it's just so funny.
Oh.
We love a good boat metaphor.
Yeah.
Okay, so interesting, but respectable. I get it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. My number four moment is from 301, bringing it back to the premiere here, Like a Virgin. It's Jen's cheerleader tryout.
When you see Belinda and her clique in the hallway, you're desperately wishing that you were walking with them, aren't you? And thinking that maybe if you were wearing the right shoes, sporting the latest hairstyle, and using the hottest shade of lip gloss, then maybe they would toss a glance in your direction. Ever wonder why they force their narrow-minded opinions down our throats? Perhaps it's because they have an inkling of what the future has in store for them beyond graduation. Cut to 25 years from now, Belinda McGovern wakes up one morning feeling empty. Maybe it's because her Dartmouth-educated lawyer husband, Tad, has run off to Tijuana with her daughter's roommate from boarding school. Or maybe it's because the twins, Timmy and Tommy, call her by her first name and they're live-in housekeeper mom. Or maybe it's Belinda's daily 2 o'clock, 5 o'clock, 7 o'clock, and 9:15 showdown with her bottle of Prozac. Her life has become a domestic wasteland. Avoid this bait. Don't let yourself become another cookie-cutter blonde, size 4, rah-rah, sis, bam-boom, mindless, soulless, spineless wench. Screw these auditions, screw cheerleading, and screw Belinda McGovern.
I think this is so funny, and this is like pre-Henry stuff, which is a Jen that I was like really getting into, just because, I mean, she had so much drama seasons 1 and 2, mainly season 2, I mean, up and down, just all over with her character. And I felt like the writers were getting into a groove of, like, who Jen was in high school, like, the kind of Jen we would see, the kind of Jen who was, like, accidentally popular, who accidentally gets homecoming queen and accidentally ends up head cheerleader because she's just sarcastic and, like, in your face about stuff. But this whole cheerleader, like, saga narrative of cheerleader Jen, I mean, cheerleader Jen was amazing.
She's so great. I love cheerleader Jen.
I miss
so much.
Cheerleader
so
Jen. Yeah.
Me too.
And I mean, Michelle Williams just plays it so well, you know.
Yeah.
So I really, I love that. I miss that. I don't know, but I've been told.
Capeside Minutemen break the mold. We've got style, we've got class. So what if those other guys kick our ass?
All right, number three.
My number three is another Pacey Joey moment. It's the last Pacey Joey moment to appear on my list. It's also another, like, not happy Pacey Joey moment. It's from episode 18, Neverland, right after they kiss, and Joey basically starts yelling at Pacey.
Are you insane? How could you do that? How could you take some simple declaration of friendship as an invitation to just maul me, Pacey? Answer me. What were you thinking? What?
I don't know. God, I mean, it was an impulse.
An impulse?
Yes, an impulse. You know, sudden, momentary, and believe me, fleeting.
Do you have any idea the monumental implications of that meaningless little impulse? The ripple effect that it could create on our small but fragile universe?
You're right, Potter. Forgive me for thinking a kiss is just a kiss.
Well, it's true. A kiss is not just a kiss, not between you and me, and you know why. Dawson, remember? I mean, he factors into this little hormonal meltdown.
Meltdown?
Yeah.
I just had a meltdown? Forgive me if I don't think that this is the worst tragedy in the history of humankind, that Pacey Witter, in a moment of impulsive, compulsive, hormone-induced insanity, would have the nerve to kiss Joey Potter. And you let me do it. You did. You let me do it. So what now? I guess the universe begins to unravel. Well, excuse me while I get in the car.
One, because, like, it's a really sweet moment, like, to open on. Two, because Joey's reaction kind of, like, communicates how she really feels, you know? And three, because I don't think you ever really see Pacey as taken aback ever in this series as when he's kissed Joey and then she's just super angry at him.
True.
Like, Pacey is normally such, like, a big character, and, like, he retracts in that scene into, like, a little shell, and he does it really well. Also, we drove by there.
We did drive by there. We drove on that road.
I wasn't paying attention. I was driving.
I was pointing at things. No, that's a good true love moment.
And it gave us a lot to talk about, too, in the episode, because, like, they had kissed before.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, I hadn't thought about the parallels between the two kisses, but there was a lot of material there.
I love how that all of that was probably unintentional too from the writers, because obviously things changed so much between season one and three. But yeah, everything just kind of flows together. It's like it was all meant to be.
It works so perfectly. Yeah. If you don't remember our season 3 episode 18 episode, go back and re-listen to it. It's a really good episode.
Just amping up ourselves here. All right.
Yeah. You can find it on DawsonSpeakPod.com.
DawsonSpeak.com.
Oh, God. No. DawsonSpeak.com.
Wow.
This is why Tracy does all our promo.
Clearly. All right. My number 3 moment is, like, yeah, I mentioned before, it is from 311 Barefoot at Cape Fest. It is the Dawson Nikki conversation in her room.
There's so much to be passionate about. It seems kind of silly to only focus on one.
Yeah, but if you're lucky enough to find that one thing, why not just immerse yourself in it?
Don't get me wrong, Dawson. I love film. But I love it because it allows me to explore all of the other subjects that interest me. If all you care about is film, then you're just going to end up making movies about other movies. What good is that?
Nikki is a character that had such potential. I'm so sad that she's gone. But I love this conversation because it gives us a side to Dawson that we don't really ever see. Like, emotional, vulnerable, open Dawson.
Yeah.
Is the kind of Dawson that even when he was talking, like, even when he was close with Joey, we rarely saw it. And he didn't even want to talk to Joey about his parents' divorce.
Truth is, most of the time, I'm fine with their not being together. You know, I mean, maybe I'm just self-obsessed, but I don't think about it that much, you know? And then, other times, it just kind of sneaks up on you. You know? I mean, it's like a disappointment of being the product of something that didn't work out. I mean, because that's what our parents are. They're our primary examples of love. And my example just wasn't, I guess, strong enough to...
Dawson?
Yeah, I should keep going. Tell your dad, thanks.
But I feel like that's such an important part of his character, like what he was going through with that. And the writers didn't fully explore it until Nikki came along and could relate to Dawson and gave him kind of like someone to talk to who actually understood.
Yeah.
And I feel like, oh, that Dawson-Nikki relationship could have been so good.
If only she stayed, like, everything would be different.
I know. And I really like this conversation in her room because it just shows such a difference between Dawson, the kid who is obsessed with film and shows it in almost a juvenile way, versus Nikki, who is also obsessed with film, but like she says, like, I have all these other interests because it allows me to love film even more. It's just two different viewpoints, but they're reading the same book, just not in the same chapter, you know, to put up a metaphor there. Not a boat metaphor, but it's a book metaphor.
They're both sailing the same passage but on different winds.
Yes. Thank you. And, you know, this is also the catalyst for Dawson kind of going through his identity crisis, which, yep, I kind of wish the writers wrote out fully, but whatever. So, yeah, that is my number 3 moment.
Don't patronize me.
What about your number 2 moment?
My number 2 moment is from episode 20, The Longest Day. It's a Dawson-Joey moment. It's the second time we see Ver talk, and we focus on Dawson's face instead of Joey.
Well, it's the three friends that grew up with each other. Jeff Bridges is in love with Sybil Shepherd, and she dumps him and breaks his heart, and he's devastated. And she's not. she just kind of moves on to the other guy. And it destroys their friendship. And that's pretty much how it ends. Everyone alone, everyone hating each other. It's really depressing, actually. I don't know why I'm watching it. So what do you want to talk about?
And I love that so much because, like, by this point, like, you figured out what the episode is doing. And if you compare the two scenes where, like, Joey is talking and then, like, Dawson is listening, James Vanderbeek does a really good job of, like, quietly acting out how sad and devastated he is. He doesn't say very much, but it's just a good scene.
It is. It's also too visual for a podcast.
I know.
But
I
agree. The Longest Day was an episode that I was like, oh, is this my favorite episode? Because I do, it's one of my 10 out of 10. So
it's a great episode.
It is a good episode. And there are so many moments from it that I think stand out. But I agree with you that James Van Der Beek, maybe because we hadn't seen it from him for a lot of the season, but like, he did a really good job in this episode.
He delivers like the performance of the episode in that scene.
Yeah. No, it's good. And I think seeing those scenes the second and the third time really changed the context. And you're right. Those are good scenes.
What's your number two?
My number two, I feel like it's going to be your number one. I don't know. It's a Jack Mr. McPhee scene.
Oh.
It's from 323, True Love. It is when Jack comes home to Mr. McPhee, who is trying to ask him like what happened. And Jack has his breakdown about how he didn't ask to be gay.
The whole year is a wash. My whole life is a wash.
Your life is not a wash. You hurt now because you had the guts to put yourself out there. To go after what you wanted.
I can't keep going through this. It's like having all the problems of a typical teenager, and then there's this whole other level of constant fear and pain. Do you know the anguish I went through over a kiss? One stupid little kiss. Most people don't have to do that.
You're right. They don't.
Then why me? I don't want to be different. I didn't ask to be gay.
No more than I asked for a gay son. But boy, am I glad I got one.
You don't mean that?
Yeah, I do.
It just brings the whole thing full circle. Like, you think back to 2:14 and 2:15, Jack is kind of huddled in the same position, crying on the stairs about being gay. And then you fast forward a season later, and he is on the kitchen floor in the same position, except this time the pain is about a different part of this journey of trying to like understand who he is. And his dad has done like a 180 and is like, you know, this is a change we started seeing back in 318, you know, when he realizes that Jack is a good kid. But even at the beginning of the season, I mean, you have Mr. McPhee being like, Jack, I want you in my life again because you're on the football team. And Jack was like, no. Yeah. And you just, as an audience, have gone on this journey where you're trying to understand this relationship. And I think in this moment, at the season finale, where he says, you know, I didn't ask for a gay son, but I'm glad I got one, and goes and, like, hugs him, is such, like, it's so cathartic. It's such a moment of, like, oh my gosh, like, I've been waiting for that. Like, I feel like as a viewer, I've been waiting for it as much as Jack has been waiting for it, without realizing that I was waiting for it, you know, until it happened. And it was like, oh my God, like, that's what I needed. That's the closure that I think we all needed. This journey that we started in 2:14 and 2:15, when Jack first came out, like, I think the parallels of Jack crying and Mr. McPhee being like, get up, and yelling at him about it, to now when he's like on the floor with Jack, I think that just like says so much about their relationship. Yeah. That it just, it's such a good moment.
It is great. That's a great pick. I didn't even think about like the parallels between 2:14, 2:15.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so much.
Yeah, like I was thinking about it with, you know, the way that he was yelling at both Andy and Jack, being like, get up, like, stop crying. And he was so like, just, I don't even want to deal with it. Kind of, you know, responds the way that he's handled all of his family. He just doesn't want to deal with it. And then, you know, it comes around to him being like, no, I want to hear about your day, and I want to know what's happening, and I'm, you know, I'm hugging you and I'm crying with you. Like, ugh, so good.
That's such a good relationship, such a good like story through line. Oh, those observations make my number one look a little bit worse, because my number one is not that scene.
Okay, what's your number one?
My number one is a Mr. McPhee Jack scene, but it's from episode 18, Neverland. Again, making a show on this list. It's when Ethan asks Mr. McPhee to have dinner with him.
Mr. McPhee, would you care to join us for dinner?
Well, you know, if your boys don't mind, I'd love that.
Great, let's go.
Well, just let me get the jacket.
Okay.
So what I love about this scene is that, like, it's Ethan teaching Jack about what he's going to need in life in a very, like, positive, like, happy person kind of way. You know, he, like, later tells in the episode, like, you know, you can be angry if you want. I'm paraphrasing because I don't remember the exact lines. But he can, like, you can be angry, but at the end of it, like, you're going to realize you spent that year in anger and, like, you're still going to need your dad. And I think this, it, I mean, it started all the way back in 214, 215, but I feel like this is the start of when, like, the father-son relationship starts getting repaired. So not only is it a great standalone scene, it also kicks off, like, a great storyline.
I was talking to Richard at the office. He has a son, just failed out of his fourth college, got caught stealing a car, drug problem, whole nine yards. It just suddenly occurred to me. Jack is a good kid. I have a good kid, and I don't even know him. But I want to know him. So I canceled my trip. Look, I don't see what the big deal is. Somebody had to make the first move.
I just didn't think it would be you.
My top moment of the season is one I've also talked extensively about. It is from 314, Valentine's Day Massacre. It is Doug and Pacey talking in the jail.
So what is it, a girl or something?
What?
Okay, so it's a girl. Who is she?
You know what, Dougie? It's really not that important, okay?
Okay.
I'll tell you something, though. She is really, really annoying.
Yeah?
Yeah, I mean, this girl is amazing. There is not a single subject on the face of the planet that she doesn't have an opinion about. It's mind-boggling.
Well, that certainly sounds like a nightmare.
Well, no, I mean, it's not quite like that. I mean, you got to understand it. The girl's really smart, so she's usually right. And when she argues, it comes from this really beautiful, pure place. So, I mean, how can you fight against that, you know? Especially if you're a smart-ass like me.
Is she pretty?
Yeah, she is pretty. She is very, very pretty. She's actually the kind of pretty that gives you butterflies, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Never lose the butterflies.
What?
You know, that's maybe what sucks most about getting older. Somewhere along the line, you just lose the butterflies. So the question is, little brother, what are you going to do about it?
Do?
Yeah, do as in do something. Take action.
No, I don't think you're really properly grasping the gravity of this situation, Dougie. You see, if I was actually to do something about this, there is the strong possibility that the sun would cease to shine, that the tides would cease to rise. In fact, I'm betting there's a pretty good chance that the very earth would crack open and Capeside would become home to a huge hellmouth that would spew forth endless hordes of monsters and demons that would choke the denizens of this city, making them fall to their knees and pray for a return to the days before I took action. That's really what we're talking about here.
Huh. Yeah, maybe. Look, Pacey, in my experience, you don't come across that many people with the ability to give you butterflies. You just don't. And if you don't tell this girl how you feel, well, it'll be like spending the rest of your life in your own personal prison.
Hey, Doug?
Yeah.
Thank you.
So this is my favorite moment. I don't want to say it's like my favorite moment of the entire show. It's definitely up there, and the reason why is because, and I mentioned this in our 314 episode, but Doug's character, like, in this episode specifically, this moment specifically, completely changes. And I love that because, you know, to have the older brother who is, like, perfect and, you know, he and Pacey don't get along, like, that's a relationship fine that we could deal with because Pacey's the black sheep of his family. but Pacey needs allies. And especially going into this whole like love triangle stuff, he needs allies who are older, more mature, and out of this, removed from the situation. You know, that's not like Jen or Andy or Jack or whoever, you know? And the big brother role is like kind of a natural fit. I love the character of Doug. I remember saying this back in season one, and you were like, why? Because the Doug you saw in season one is pulling a gun on Pacey.
Yeah. Season one Doug, bad Doug. Season three Doug, amazing Doug.
Yeah, season three Doug has come around so much, and honestly ends up being like a character that I think people can really identify with more so than like the teenagers on the show. And mainly because, I mean, this is a Doug who, maybe this is just because I'm watching this as a, you know, 20-something year old who...
We're basically Doug's age.
Yeah. But, you know, he's someone who comes around so much to being the big brother to Pacey that Pacey's always needed. Mm-hmm. Even though if Pacey's never really like said it, you know? And I think that that's really important. That's really important for Pacey's growth and development. Obviously, like, it's important for Pacey just in general because it's given him a place to live, you know? And I think, like, these family relationships of that Pacey has are so important to the character of Pacey that it's important we see them. We see them on screen and how they play out because it's more meaningful and impactful than just Pacey saying, oh, I'm the black sheep of the family.
Yeah.
And I think sort of the tension you feel and see from Doug in how he treats Pacey, whether or not Pacey is actually the black sheep of the family or however, you know, like however Pacey sees himself versus how everyone treats him, I think is really interesting. But I love this moment in the jail because it's also one of the first times that Pacey actually acknowledges verbally how he feels about Joey. Like explicitly says it. Like,
yeah.
That's the first time I think he actually does. That has a bit like a subtle moment because, you know, we saw it, we get to the country and stuff like that. It was much more subtle. But he like says it out loud, you know, the, how much he cares about Joey. And he says it to his older brother. And I think that's not only a good like Pacey Joey moment that's not involving Joey, but it's a good Pacey Joey like ship moment. It's also a good family Witter moment.
Yeah.
And I think with relationships like, you know, Doug and Pacey, and to some extent Pacey and his dad, like in those relationships when you have nowhere to go but up, it's just so satisfying to see that up, you know, which is why all the stuff with Sheriff Witter, when he was apologizing to Pacey and they were, you know, having those moments, like that's why it was so powerful, because it's like you were just rooting so hard for it to change, and you thought it would never would because things were just so bad and that's just how it is. And then all of a sudden it changes and it's like, oh, yes, it's so satisfying.
Pacey has had a great, like, two seasons from a character point of view.
Yeah. Those writers loved him.
That's a great pick for number one. And, like, I feel bad not including a Pacey Doug moment on my list because I do really like their relationship.
Yeah. It's a good one. All right, let's talk about some honorable mention stuff. A lot of my honorable mention stuff ends up being, like, Pacey Joey moments.
Yeah.
It was the first kiss thing that you mentioned was on my kind of honorable mention list. The moment that made me laugh and still makes me laugh, the Jack Andy selling prom tickets moment, I think is so funny. I just love Jack. It's Jack and Jen talking on the grass as the sprinklers go off. Yeah, there's so many good moments. Oh, when Pacey is trying to get Joey to come to the play, the opening night of his play, and is like trying to convince her in her room while she's getting ready for her date.
My honorable mentions are mostly like small moments that I smiled at. I offered you Chex Mix from Four to Tango.
It seems to me that under the previous regimes in my life, every time I was studying, I was given a reward.
I offered you Chex Mix.
And I'm not talking about Chex Mix.
I also really liked when Graham's talked about Thomas Culpepper in True Love.
It's a good one.
This show is full of great moments.
It really is. And the season is so good, which is so funny because we're going to talk about it. What's your average, when you average out your season rating, like what do you get?
Across the entire season as one unit, I get about 8.5.
Oh, me too. So this is obviously higher than seasons one and two. I think season two, my average rating was like 7.5, 8 maybe?
Yeah, mine was, I think, in the high 7s. I don't remember exactly.
Yeah, I feel like my average rating would have been higher had I not hated the first like 6 episodes so much.
Yeah.
But this, it's so funny that everyone talks about how much they love the season, but the things that they talk about, it's the last like third of the season, I feel.
Yeah.
And then the moments from the beginning of the season that they love are probably like Jack and Andy and, well, not so much Andy, but like Jack and like Jen type storylines.
Yeah. Like the cheerleader stuff and like the football stuff, maybe. I can look at my scores in a line and there's like a very obvious mark at about episode 8 where like everything else is very highly rated and everything before is very low rated.
Yeah, same.
Like, if you average out my ratings for episode 1 to 7, I think it's like a 7.2.
Hmm. Yeah.
And that's only because I really liked episode 2 and I gave it a 9.5. And if you averaged my scores from, like, episode 8 onward, you almost hit 9 for the entire run, which is crazy for, like, 15 episodes.
Now, this is a good one. I feel like season 4 also picks up a lot of that momentum, too. Okay. And I think you'll feel that too. I think it's difficult in beginnings of seasons when you come back because, you know, you obviously left off at a cliffhanger. You got the whole summer to sort of mull on it. People want to come back with a strong first episode, but they also don't want to alienate the audiences too. So, yeah. Season 4, though, I think does a good job of keeping that momentum up. So, and I think it'll also help that you and I aren't, you know, spending 3 months not watching the show before we jump into season 4.
I feel like always time skipping in between seasons like hurts the show a little bit, or like it makes it awkward to write, but I guess it's true to life, right? Back when the show was airing, mm-hmm. you always time skipped.
Yeah,
because summer happened.
Yeah for sure. I also want to talk about, let's talk a little more about the character of Andy.
Okay,
before we jump into our ranking of the core six. This is something that people have talked a lot about in our comments on our website, DawsonSpeak.com, and on social media, in emails. I've messaged with a few people on Twitter directly as well. The character of Andy is challenging in this season.
Yeah.
And I've said this before, but Kevin Williamson has talked so much about how he loved the character of Andy. And, you know, with him leaving, perhaps it did make it difficult to keep up those reasons for why Andy was so great. And there were a lot of characters that were introduced, a lot of stories they wanted to fill in there that perhaps they just feel like they felt like they didn't have time to develop Andy.
Yeah.
But you saw such an up and down, like, roller coaster ride of the character of Andy starting from, like, the end of season 2 even. And I feel like I'm kind of disappointed because I feel like they could have done so much with that story, but it kind of just disappears, right?
Yeah, it's really like disappears a little bit, and like Andy like is all over the place. Like at the beginning of the season did not help Andy at all, where like she comes back and then she becomes evil, and like it's hard to recover from that. She kind of did by the end, but she feels a lot more like a secondary character in this season mm-hmm. than she did in season 2.
Yeah, definitely, right? Like even though Meredith Monroe was added to the opening credits, like it definitely felt like, you know, she started the season, she cheated on Pacey, which is something else actually in the Summer Diaries they bring up, where Pacey mentions that he thinks Joey is afraid of making any mistakes because Pacey wouldn't forgive Andy for one mistake.
Yeah.
And Pacey says, but I'm learning, you know, from Joey, I'm learning forgiveness or whatever. And I think like that's such an interesting character read. But like we start out the season with, you know, Andy cheats on Pacey, they break up, she dates Rob Logan, she tries to get back together with Pacey.
It's messy.
It is messy. And I'm not saying that they needed to, that her character could only be someone who deals with like mental illness or anything like that, but what a missed opportunity to kind of delve into those issues.
Yeah, like the most we got out of it was what, Mr. McPhee saying the doctors like to remind you with mental illness you're never out of the woods?
Yeah.
Like that
10-second
scene.
And yet we don't see that reflected at all. And again, not that that should be the only thing that her character deals with, but like that is a part of her character.
Yeah, that's part of her life.
And it's a part of her life. And I don't know, perhaps that could have given us more to work with when it came to just her stories in general. But we got the PSAT cheating stuff. We've got disciplinary committee stuff. I don't know. The stuff with Andy just wasn't compelling this season until it got to the end and how she worked through her friendship and relationship kind of tension with Pacey and then with Joey.
Yeah.
And with Will Krunsky. I felt like the most interesting Andy got was when Will was around.
That's true. Poor Andy. I loved her so much last season. I was not super into her this season at all.
Yeah, which is disappointing, but there's always hope for the next season, right, Charles?
Is there? Is there, Tracy?
Is there? We'll find out. Let's talk about our core six ranking then. We're talking about Dawson, Joey, Jen, Pacey, Jack, and Andy. How do you rank them?
First place, Pacey Witter. I feel like that's not a surprise. Second place, Jack McPhee. Third place, Joey Potter. Third place, Joey Potter. And I'm going to say tied in fourth place, Andy and Jen. And then in last place, Dawson.
Interesting. Why? What are your reasonings for that?
Like, everyone knows I love Pacey by now. Like, season one, Charles Lamb is gone. And he's getting so many meaty storylines. His relationship with his family is beautiful. Jack, very much of the same stuff. The reason Joey is in third is not so much because, like, I love Joey or anything. She has a lot of interesting conflict going on in her life, and, like, she's fun to watch. But the reason I put her in third is because Andy and Jen, I tied them because I feel like they don't get anything to work with in this season, really.
Interesting.
Right? Like, we discussed it with Andy, but, like, Jen, too, like, her season was basically mostly that Henry stuff, which, like, I didn't care about. So you have two characters I really care about in Pacey and Jack, one character I sort of care about in Joey, two characters who I'm not very invested in at all at this point in Andy and Jen, and then Dawson, who I think is evil right now. And, like, I can understand where it makes some sense that he's doing what he's doing, but just because, like, a character's actions make sense don't mean I have to like them.
True.
Doesn't mean that they're justified. So that's why my rankings, why it is.
Okay. My rankings are similar.
Okay.
But not the same.
Okay.
My first place is Jack. Second is Pacey. Third is Jen. Fourth is Joey. Fifth is Andy. Sixth is Dawson. It's interesting because as you were talking, I was thinking, like, how different would it be if we ranked the core six from, like, after the pilot versus after the season finale? Right? Because their storylines were so different. They were all at different places, right? Because I would argue that the first couple of episodes, Joey was near insufferable, right?
Yeah, no, she was.
So, like, it's so difficult when you try to average out, okay, when I'm ranking them, I'm thinking about whose stories I care about the most.
Yeah.
And also thinking about what they added to this season in terms of just, like, moving stories along, right? So Jack, obviously, like, for me, I think had the most character development and growth over the course of season three. And I think it helped that he was coming into season three as already being the outcast, the homeless outcast, essentially, right? We also forget that season three opens with that great scene with Jack and Jen pouring milk.
The breakfast scene.
Yeah, and Graham's being like, how long have you guys been married? Like, you know, we start off with Jack being utterly lost and then quickly finding his kind of place. But I also just really appreciated how the writers developed that character over the season. In the same ways where I was like, you know, Andy doesn't need to only be the character with mental illness. Like, at the same time, it's still who she is, and they kind of erase that from her character.
It's really weird how Jack and Andy have similar character shapes, but the writers handle them completely differently.
Right, and I think a lot of it has to do with just, like, what the writers were familiar with. And like I said, they've written so much of Jack through their own experiences and perspectives, and I think that helps to have that experience. It kind of informs the character in a different way.
Yeah.
And I like that even though a lot of Jack's storylines were about the fact that he's gay, it never felt like, oh, that's like the gay storyline, you know?
No.
And so I feel like from start to finish, Jack is a character who I care the most about because I worry the most about Jack, I think.
Yeah.
But I also think I just like Kurt Smith a lot. Which is not to say anything negative about the character of Pacey and Joshua Jackson. Like, I think I only put him second because I don't know. Someone has to be second. Like, it's not that I disliked anything about Pacey storylines. I mean, I feel like the hot-headed Pacey stuff, like, okay, we've seen that before, like, but that's just who he is. That's part of his character. So you can't really fault him for it. I mean, there's nothing wrong with Pacey. Do I wish that the love triangle played out a little bit differently? Yes, but that's mainly because of a lot of the, like, Dawson and to some extent some of the Joey stuff too, which I'm going to talk about. But the reason why I rank Joey fourth, though, is because a large part of it is because I wanted to put Jen a little bit higher. Even though, yes, a lot of her story this season was kind of bogged down by the Henry stuff.
Yeah.
I think the Jen stuff that I loved and cared about and that I felt really developed her character, which was the cheerleading stuff to some extent, you know, her getting more involved in school stuff, because I think having Jen involved in school stuff is important, you know, and then it's the whole, like, weird hooking up with Pacey stuff, which I think really did help both of their characters, as weird and icky as it was. The stuff with her mom really helped inform us. Her relationship with Joey, the way she always tries to act as a friend, her relationship with Grabs, the way that developed. Like, I cared more about those things than I cared about Joey and Andy's stories overall, I think.
Okay.
And, like, I would say overall the entire season, if you asked me, like, do you think that Jen had a better storyline? I would say no, but I think I cared about her more.
Okay.
Like, with Joey, I don't know, so much of her storyline this season was kind of bogged down in the love triangle stuff.
That's true.
And her indecisiveness in some ways. I'm not saying that it's, like, her fault that Dawson acted the way he did, but it just felt like constantly the writers were putting Joey in a position of, like, oh, I don't know what to do, and I'm torn between two boys, and it's like, okay, like, yes, this love triangle is interesting, but, like, give Joey something else, too.
Yeah.
And I felt like, when you asked me what else Joey did the story, it was like, oh, she dated AJ. Oh, she painted this mural. Oh, she was torn between two boys. Like, I don't know. I just felt like I wasn't as compelled by her storylines.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And then Andy, I've already talked about my issues and frustrations with Andy. As much as I love the character, she flip-flops too much for me to be like, I want to see more Andy. And then Dawson, we've already...
doesn't feel like a consistent character.
Yeah, she doesn't feel consistent. And then we've already talked about Dawson. We don't need to keep talking about Dawson.
I feel like if you look at our rankings, mine skews a lot more towards the end of the season. Right?
Yeah.
Like, it feels like I came up with my rankings, like, ignoring the first, like, five episodes.
Yeah, and I focused a lot on the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
We balance each other out. Yeah. It's all good. Okay. What is your hashtag Dawson's Creek taught me for the season? What did the season teach you?
Dawson's Creek taught me not to listen to my kooky artist aunt, because I'll just ruin my life, apparently.
That's it?
I mean, like, Aunt Gwen.
Ugh, Aunt Gwen.
Imagine a universe in Dawson's Creek where either they don't go to Aunt Gwen's or, like, Nikki Green sticks around. Like,
would have been Dawson's a completely different horrible show.
I know. Like, Dawson would probably rank in the upper half of my core six if that happened. But don't trust kooky artist aunts. They don't know about love and or art.
It's a good Dawson's Creek taught me. My Dawson's Creek taught me is that there's a boat metaphor for everything. As evidenced by not only this episode, but the Summer Diaries.
Whether someone's an anchor weighing you down to the coastline, or there's smooth seas ahead, or whether a boat is or is not seaworthy.
Oh my god, there's going to come a point where you and I at work are either going to be in a meeting, or we're going to be working on an article, and we're going to start talking in boat metaphors.
I feel like we could do it now.
And people will be like, oh, that's just Tracy and Charles and their Dawson's Creek kick. Oh my gosh, yes. More boat metaphors, please.
There really is one for everything.
There really is. Really is. And this was not, you know, all the stuff that happened in The Longest Day and in Summer Diaries by extension, it's not the first time we heard these over-the-top boat metaphors. Remember when Pacey was first fixing up True Love and he and Andy had spent the night together? And then Andy comes to, like, bring him dinner and, like, okay, we're going to get back together officially. And then as she's talking to him, Pacey's talking about, like, I don't know if this boat is ready. Like, he's talking in boat metaphors at that time, too. So they were totally talking in boat metaphors this entire frickin' season.
It's harder to rebuild something than it is to just start from scratch.
Why?
That picture that you have in your mind of the way something was, it's never going to be that way again.
Yeah, but it could be better.
Yeah, it could be.
Depending on how badly damaged it was in the first place.
How badly damaged was it?
It was pretty much totaled.
I feel like there was so much to go through this season. We didn't even talk at all this study hall about Mitch and Gale.
Oh, God, yeah. They were divorced and now they aren't any longer.
Yeah, like, all that stuff, like, deciding to get divorced. Remember, that was all, like, the beginning of the season. That was not season two. That was this season.
You look back on this season, and there's so much that you don't remember. It's not, like, it's superfluous or anything. It's just a lot.
It's also interesting because we're watching this with such, like, close deep dives week to week. We remember things more than I think the average viewer may have remembered back in, like, 1999 or 2000.
Yeah.
Because, like, I'm sure by the time the average viewer got to the season finale, like, they weren't thinking about, you know, Rob Logan anymore.
Imagine you could only watch every single one of these episodes once. Like, no cutting clips, no watching back to check anything. Like, how much would you actually retain?
And I would say even with shows like Friends or Gilmore Girls, I mean, these are shows, obviously, that I love and have watched, like, a bajillion times on Netflix. But, you know, on first watch through, for sure, you go back to season to a friend and you're like, oh, I forgot that Ross dated that person, you know, like, just like little things like that. I think it's probably common for the average Dawson's Creek viewer. I think it helps now that we've got multiple platforms you could watch Dawson's Creek on. So
yeah.
All right, Charles, I feel like we could talk forever about season three.
We could talk forever about Dawson's Creek.
Clearly we have. This is what, episode 60 something we've done of this podcast. If you all have anything else you want to add, this post on our website, DawsonSpeak.com, we'll have comments open. So please engage. If you, again, like I said, if you've not yet rated or reviewed us on the iTunes machine, please do. Next week, we are going to be doing our Young Americans episode.
Coca-Cola presents Young Americans.
Coca-Cola presents Young Americans. So yeah, what a season.
I can understand why. Well, I mean, I still have three seasons left of Dawson's Creek, but I can understand why people say season three is one of their favorites.
Season three is a good one. All right. Charles.
Yes, Tracy.
Do you have any predictions for season four? In the past, I've let you ask me a question, but I don't want to do that as we get closer to, like, I don't know. I feel like I don't want to accidentally spoil anything for you.
Yeah. And I have a lot of, like, random information about season four already.
Okay. So is there any predictions that you have?
I will say my only prediction I'm going to have right now is when we get back to Cape Side, Dawson will be miserable.
Okay.
That's it.
Okay. So here's what I can tell you about season four. You already know the thing about Mr. McPhee.
Yes.
By the midway point of season four,
uh-huh,
you'll have met new characters,
uh-huh,
and have lost old characters.
Who's leaving? Someone's leaving. Someone major is leaving.
So either it could be either someone major, like someone you've known since season one, or it could be someone you've just met at the end of season three.
This is not helping me at all whatsoever.
There are some people who did say, yes, you should tell Charles who is leaving. And there's some people who were like, no, absolutely not. We want the raw, unfiltered reaction. So I'm going to go with the raw, unfiltered reaction. People want that more.
That makes sense.
Okay. That's all I'm going to say. Charles. Are you ready for Young Americans?
No. Well, actually, Young Americans, maybe.
For everyone asking, we're only going to be watching the pilot and talking about it, but we are going to talk about, like, the full series itself as well. It's just that we don't have the time to watch all episodes that our friend Josh over at Creek of the Week has kindly sent to us. Thank you again. But like I've said, Creek of the Week has done, like, a full Young Americans series, which we've linked before on the website. We'll link it again in the show notes for this episode. But in the meantime, talk to us at all the places. You know where to find them. DawsonSpeak.com/contact. Maybe that's the short URL. I don't know. Go to DawsonSpeak.com. There's a contact page.
Yeah, click on some things.
Click on some things. You'll find it. Talk to us. We love hearing from you. We appreciate your downloads and listens. Whether you love us or hate us, you could be hate listening to us for all we know.
Yeah, that's fine.
But it's still a listen and we appreciate it. Charles.
Yes, Tracy.
Is it time to put a bow on season three? Are we done?
So we should pull up our mast and set off into the sunset.
Yes, let's set off into the sunset for this trip down the eastern coast to Disney World. Spoiler alert for the summer diaries that y'all are going to go read right as soon as you're done listening to this episode. Goodbye.
You know, this is not about religion, Barbara. I mean, the kind that hates people. You know, the intolerant, judgmental, hypocritical kind. Closed-minded, immature, bigoted kind.
With bad fashion sense.
Really bad.